Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. I have a mix of items. I think I say that every week, but it is a mix of items. I'm finishing off a couple lists that I've been reading, one for a very long time and one from last week, but I'll start with our must list. Superman and Lois finale, a delicious new chef's table season, and a New Order box set top this week's must list. Kate Hudson's new Christmas single and a British crime drama round out our picks. This is by the Entertainment Weekly staff. There's a lot of discourse over living in the age of the remake, reboot, and sequel. And I'm a huge proponent of original ideas, but there truly is an art to re-envisioning a beloved piece of work or expanding on a known world. And when it's done right, that does deserve some praise. My third and fourth giant group outings to see Wicked, a Sunday spent watching Gladiator II arena scenes through winced eyes, lots of terrifying monkeys in theaters this weekend, and Monday night amid a theater of kids having a blast at Moana 2 are evidence that good movies are good movies, whether original or not. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. See you at my fifth Wicked screening. That was Patrick Gomez, editor-in-chief. The first item on our must list is Superman and Lois. Superman's, played by Tyler Hoechlin's, human heart is failing. Lex, played by Michael Kudlitz, has turned the world against Lois, played by Elizabeth Tulloch, and Doomsday is back for round two. Yeah, there's a lot going on heading into the Superman and Lois series finale on Monday night. We won't spoil how it all resolves, but the surprising, devastating, and ultimately hopeful final scenes stay true to what this delightful, poignant, and beautiful series has always been about. Truth, justice, and a better tomorrow. We weren't ready to say goodbye to this incredible show just yet, but thankfully it still gets the satisfying closure it and its fans deserve. Chef's Table. After filling up on your Thanksgiving feast, immerse yourself in even more food with Netflix's gorgeously shot culinary series. Season 7's lineup includes top chef favorite Kwame Onwuachi, as well as chefs from Philadelphia, Spain, and Mexico City. New Order Brotherhood Box Set. This massive new edition of the Electro Rock Pioneers 1986 album still features Bizarre Love Triangle, but now includes demos, unreleased tracks, and rare video footage in a set that includes one LP, two CDs, two DVDs, and a 48-page book, and way too many hooks to count. Get Millie Black. Former Scotland Yard detective Millie Black, played by Tamara Lawrence, moves home to work for the Jamaican police force and reconnect with her estranged transgender sister, played by Chyna McQueen. Created by Marlon James, this HBO crime drama delivers an absorbing missing person mystery and an incisive exploration of generational and colonial trauma. And the last on our list is Kate Hudson's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. The holidays came early with this slinky version of the 1940s classic Judy Garland first introduced us to in Meet Me in St. Louis, which has a surprising history. A perfect platform for Hudson's breathy yet powerful vocals, it's a perfect addition to your Yuletide playlist. That's the must list for this week, Superman and Lois finale, a delicious new chef's table season, and a New Order box set top this week's must list. It was by the Entertainment Weekly staff. And if you're wondering about the history of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, I was wondering what they were talking about too. So here is an article that they had linked. It is from 2020, This is how Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas became one of the season's most beloved songs. The story of how a song performed by Judy Garland in Meet Me in St. Louis grew to be a beloved Christmas standard and got happier lyrics along the way. This is by Chris Willman. Even though I said this was from 2020, it opens with this article was originally published on December 22, 2006. There are two classic Christmas anthems locked in a struggle for the nation's soul. One, the perennial leader, is Nat King Cole popularized the Christmas song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, a glowing portrait of America in heavenly, secular peace. And then we have the challenger, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which this year leaped to number 2 on ASCAP's annual list of the most performed holiday songs. Chestnuts has plenty going for it. Embers, tots, reindeer, an assurance of everything is in its right place, and that 1 to 92 target demographic. But it can't hold a candle to the depth and richness of Merry Little Christmas, which wins our hearts by celebrating a quality that's even more intrinsic to the season, emotional ambivalence. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas manages to be happy and sad at the same time. Hopeful, but full of melancholy, as all the best Christmas songs are, says Bette Midler, who sings it on her new CD, Cool Yule. And the song's fascinatingly tangled history has left it with several very different sets of lyrics, from the near-suicidal to the downright ebullient. There's even a recent sacred rewrite, Have Yourself a Blessed Little Christmas, which one you prefer may be the truest Rorschach test of your Yuletide temperament. Hugh Martin, the song's 92-year-old writer, is calling from a California studio where he's working on demos for a new musical. He's curious to know who's done Merry Little Christmas well this year. Though the latest interpreters include Sarah McLachlan, James Taylor, and Amy Mann, he's most excited to learn that his song has finally merited a hair metal cover. Twisted Sisters, is that the group's name? That's a hoot! In 1943, Martin and Ralph Blaine were an already successful songwriting team hired to pen the songs for the movie musical Meet Me in St. Louis, which would pair Judy Garland with her future husband, director Vincente Minnelli. Although Martin and Blaine shared credit for the tune, Martin was actually the sole writer of Merry Little Christmas, and a stubborn one. For the now famous scene in which Garland and her little sister, a 7-year-old Margaret O'Brien, are despondent over the prospect of moving away from their cherished home, he wrote an initial set of lyrics that were almost comically depressing. Among the never-recorded couplets, which he now describes as hysterically lugubrious, were lines like, "Have yourself a merry little Christmas. It may be your last. Faithful friends who were dear to us will be near to us no more." I often wondered what it would have been like if those lyrics had been sung in the movie, laughs O'Brien, now 69 at the time of this writing. But about a week before we were to shoot the scene where Judy sings it to me, she looked at the lyrics and said, "Don't you think these are awfully dark? I'm going to Hugh Martin and see if he can lighten it up a little." As Martin tells it, he initially balked at changing the words. They said, "It's so dreadfully sad." I said, "I thought the girls were supposed to be sad in that scene." And they said, "Well, not that sad." And Judy was saying, "If I sing that to sweet little Margaret O'Brien, they'll think I'm a monster." And she was quite right. But it took me a long time to get over my pride. Finally, Tom Drake, the young male lead, who was a friend, convinced me. He said, "You stupid son of a bitch. You're going to foul up your life if you don't write another verse of that song. Martin finally gave in, coming up with a new, somewhat less downbeat lyric. As sung in the movie, Merry Little Christmas is a buck-up ballad that imagines the possibility of a bright future, but finally admits, in the song's most powerful line, that until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. Liza Minnelli, Vincente Minnelli and Judy Garland's daughter, remembers her father's story about telling Martin, "No, this won't do. Look, the movie is about hope and dreams, and there's gotta be some hope in the song. My feeling is that Christmas time is about your past, and there comes a time when it does become sentimental, just because you start remembering, and people will always miss somebody at Christmas. But to indulge in that and say, everything was better then, forget it. You always gotta have hope." Meet Me in St. Louis proved to be a huge hit, but there was only a modest market for Christmas pop at the time, and the Trolley song became the breakout tune, scoring a Best Song Oscar nomination. Still, Merry Little Christmas is one of Garland's most mesmerizing screen moments and one of her most maternal. "Out of all of my mom's movies," says Garland's daughter Lorna Luft, "that's the hardest scene for me to watch." And notes Linda Ronstadt, "There is so much inherent trooperism in Garland's version, because one can imagine the topsy-turvy of her life and how many times she probably had to demonstrate the eternal cheeriness and gleefulness of Christmas." Even so, Merry Little Christmas seemed destined to languish as a beloved show tune that couldn't quite make it to standard. Then, in 1957, Frank Sinatra, who'd already cut a lovely version with the movie's bittersweet lyrics in 1947, came to Martin with a request for yet another pick-me-up. He called and asked if I would rewrite the "muddle through somehow" line, says the songwriter. He said, "The name of my album is A Jolly Christmas. Do you think you could jolly up that line for me?" Not about to give the chairman any lip, Martin made several cheerier alterations, shifting the happiness into the present tense and changing that "muddle through" line to "hang a shining star upon the highest bough." The peppier Sinatra version turned the song into a Christmas perennial. It has since been recorded thousands of times. "It's been a little confusing," says Martin, "because half the people sing one line and half sing the other. It's probably more off-balance than that. Sample a good portion of the 500-plus recordings that are up on iTunes, and most use the Sinatra lyrics." Even Garland herself eventually did. "But I still kind of like muddle through somehow myself," Martin admits. "It's just so kind of down to earth." Of course, the happy lyrics can still pack an emotional wallop. "I'm surprised that our version is very popular at all," says Chrissy Hind of The Pretenders, whose recording for the 1989 A Very Special Christmas charity album continues to get substantial airplay every year. "I was in a particularly melancholy mood, so I don't think ours is a cheerful version. Singing it upset me. I was on the verge of tears. I was thinking about relationships and how things had changed and the people that I couldn't see and couldn't be with, but maybe that sadness is what most people feel at Christmas, and maybe that's why people relate to it." Recently, more and more singers have been opting for the darker words. James Taylor, for one, was inspired to go back to the song's bittersweet roots after 9/11. He recorded Merry Little Christmas in fall 2001 and released it to radio soon after. It's included on his James Taylor at Christmas album. "It's as though people were suddenly experiencing everything on a deeper level for a while," says the singer, who was intrigued to learn that the song was penned during World War II. Though Martin has said he wasn't consciously writing about wartime separations, Taylor would be very surprised if he wasn't somehow influenced by the mood of missing people over the holidays and hoping like hell they would be home next Christmas, if not this one. In times of strife, we muddle through, as the lyric says, as the best lyric says. Not everyone feels that way, though. Muddle through is what we do, agrees Ronstadt, but I love the bravado of hanging the shining star because it gets past the layers of anxiety to find that little beacon of hope and bravery. In her recording, she neatly solves the problem by singing both versions of the key line, and that manic depressive compromise between the muddled and the magisterial might just capture Christmas best of all. I won't read them here, but they have all three versions, the original version, the Judy Garland version, and the Frank Sinatra version, listed on the website in this article, which was How Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas became one of the season's most beloved songs. It was an old article, but I think that was kind of interesting. It was by Chris Willman. Coming back to the future, I guess the present, we have a new TV show, Black Doves, and here's the review. Keira Knightley and Ben Whishaw dazzle in Netflix's Killer Spy Caper. The 6-episode spy thriller drops December 5th. This is by Kristen Baldwin. Black Doves is built on two familiar narrative tropes: the hitman with a heart that can be broken, and the spy who risks her mission for love. Even so, the spirited new Netflix thriller from Joe Barton from The Lazarus Project is a remarkably fresh, exciting, and laugh-out-loud funny caper, driven by a sharp comedic sensibility and wildly entertaining performances from stars Ben Whishaw and Keira Knightley. Helen Webb, played by Knightley, lives a posh London life with her husband Wallace Webb, played by Andrew Buchan, the UK's Secretary of Defense and a rising star in the Conservative Party. When she's not tending to their children, played by Taylor Sullivan and Charlotte Rice Foley, and otherwise playing the perfect politician's wife, Helen, not her real name, works for the Black Doves, a mercenary spy syndicate overseen by the icy Mrs. Reed, played by Sarah Lancashire. After funneling government secrets to the highest bidder for a decade, Helen is devastated to learn that Jason Davies, played by Andrew Koji, a civil servant and her clandestine lover, was assassinated by a sniper. Worried that her prize asset will get herself killed seeking revenge, Mrs. Reed recruits Sam, played by Whishaw, an experienced trigger man and Helen's old friend, to protect Helen as she hurls herself into finding Jason's killer. Naturally, Barton's series, premiering December 5th, serves up a central mystery, a complex intersection of events involving a dead Chinese ambassador, played by Andy Cheung, and his missing socialite daughter, played by Isabella Wei. But what drives Black Doves is the bond between Ben and Helen, two broken-hearted best friends who understand each other like no one else can. For Ben, who's been living in exile after a botched hit years ago, returning to London puts him painfully in proximity to his now-estranged soulmate, Michael, played by Omari Douglas, and to Lenny, played by Catherine Hunter, the boss he betrayed. And as hell-bent as she is on avenging Jason's death, Helen is fiercely devoted to her family and equally determined to keep them out of the literal line of fire. Set against a bustling London at Christmas time backdrop, Black Doves kicks off with a suspenseful action sequence: the murder of Jason and two of his associates, played by Hannah Kalike Brown and Thomas Combs, by unseen assassins. And doesn't stop running for 6 brisk episodes. Barton, who serves as sole writer on the project, doesn't try to gin up false intrigue by playing coy about basic questions. By episode 2, we know how Helen joined the Black Doves and how she and Sam met. From their very first encounter in a darkened London parking lot, Sam and Helen recognize each other, somewhat reluctantly at first, as kindred spirits who find comfort in the controlled chaos of their chosen careers. Knightley, whose exquisitely angular face moves fluidly between angelic and menacing, clearly revels in her role as Helen, a character requiring lively comedic flair. "You know, you're being very effing droll for 3 a.m. Action hero swagger and heartfelt emotion. Wishaw makes Ben believable as an efficient killer, but also a gentle, sad-eyed sweetheart who could really use a hug. Black Doves' plot occasionally gets muddled and the scripts fall back on some shop-worn spy dialogue. If the people who think I killed the ambassador are after you, then you're dead already, intones CIA agent Cole Atwood, played by Finn Bennett. You just don't know it yet. Barely detracts from the series' overall appeal, however, because Helen and Sam and their circle of trigger-happy colleagues are so darn fun to watch. Ella and Lily Hyland and Three Women's Gabrielle Creevy are especially hilarious as Williams and Eleanor, a pair of unbothered Gen Z assassins. Williams, since when have you had a rocket launcher? Eleanor, since last Christmas. Netflix has already renewed Black Doves for a second season, and the bloody, satisfying final hour sets up a series of new challenges for our anti-heroes. My holiday wish is that the streaming suits work fast to get Knightley and Wishaw back into production so we can gorge ourselves on another Helen and Sam adventure come Christmas 2025. Black Doves premieres Thursday, December 5th on Netflix. That was the review. Keira Knightley and Ben Wishaw dazzle in Netflix's Killer Spy Caper. It was by Kristen Baldwin, and she's giving the series a grade of A-. Speaking of new fall shows, I have an article to finally wrap up. I've been reading it all fall, and it was an article all about the upcoming shows of the fall season. I'm going to cover all of December here. There's not a lot of them. The first one is Star Wars Skeleton Crew. That's out December 3rd on Disney+. It's one thing to create a whole new world for a TV show, but what is it like to create a whole new world within a pre-existing one? Especially when that pre-existing one is as massive as Star Wars. Thankfully, Skeleton Crew co-creators John Watts and Christopher Ford had executive producer Dave Filoni to guide them. What's great about working at Lucasfilm is that they'll let you know if you've gone outside of the boundaries, Watts says. We will come up with ideas of things that we like, and then Filoni will be like, actually, maybe it's this. Or, oh, we already did something like that somewhere else. You feel like you can safely explore things creatively without making some huge canonical mistake. Creature Commandos is out December 5th on Max. After more than a decade of James Gunn's superhero stories, it's clear that the man loves misfits. So even though the new co-head of DC Films is directing a big new Superman movie out next summer, before then, he's got a new animated show about a motley crew of monsters. Creature Commandos is like Guardians of the Galaxy without the sentimentality, Gunn says. After the events of the Suicide Squad movies, Amanda Waller, played by Viola Davis, has been barred from sending any more human criminals on harebrained suicide missions. Her new loophole is to use non-human operatives like Frankenstein, played by David Harbour, The Bride, played by Idhira Varma, Dr. Phosphorus, played by Alan Tudyk, Nina Mazursky, played by Zoe Chow, The Weasel and G.I. Robot, played by Sean Gunn. A violent adult animated series may seem like an odd way to kick off a new superhero franchise meant to rival the Marvel Cinematic Universe in scope and connectivity. But for Gunn, Creature Commandos is a perfect way to show off the full range of DC's storytelling. Superman is the true start of everything. It's a humongous epic. This is a way for people to just take a little nibble and see what it tastes like. The Sticky is out in December, no specific date, on Prime Video. Tired of being steamrolled and much too clever to let her life crumble, Ruth Landry, played by Margot Martindale, decides to defy a heartless system by assembling a crew to undertake the Canadian heist of the century. The target? The country's multi-million dollar maple syrup surplus. Ruth, it turns out, isn't your average heist culprit. Rather than being a hardened criminal, she's a supremely competent maple syrup farmer who's got a bone to pick with her country's polite, bureaucratic conventions. She's tough and she's furious, Martindale says, adding that the story finds Ruth at the end of her rope and ready to go to any length to help her sick husband. To do so, she enlists the help of a mild-mannered security guard, played by Guillaume Cyr, and a low-level mobster, played by Chris Diamantopoulos, to change her fate in what will one day be known as the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist. Martindale is no stranger to playing a tough-as-nails woman who is more than meets the eye. Viewers of Justified and The Americans know this all too well. But while Ruth shares some of that same darkness, Martindale warns that she is also dangerously off-kilter. She's been thrown off, and so she is fighting back in a way that I haven't played before, she says. Produced by Jamie Lee Curtis, who will also appear in the series, Ruth's story is based on the real-life heist that drained about $13 million worth of the sticky stuff. Dexter: Original Sin is out in December on Paramount Plus. Patrick Dempsey and Sarah Michelle Gellar are conducting a serial killer masterclass on Dexter: Original Sin, but their characters have no idea. The 90s set Dexter prequel stars Dempsey as Captain Aaron Spencer, head of the Miami Metro Police Department's homicide division, while Gellar plays Tanya Martin, the CSI chief. They're Dexters, this time Patrick Gibson taking over the role originated by Michael C. Hall, new bosses, as he begins a forensic internship. And Gellar says her role is to be the comic relief on the show. It's fun to sort of inadvertently be the character that teaches Dexter everything that he needs to know to be a really good serial killer, but all the while not knowing that you're doing it. Meanwhile, Aaron has known Dexter since he's very little. He's seen him grow up, Dempsey says. My job is to figure out what's going on as the detective and oversee what the detectives are doing. Meanwhile, there's this father-son relationship and dark passenger, and now he's trying to navigate that. As the series progresses, that voice gets louder and louder, and it's harder and harder for Dexter to control that. 100 Years of Solitude is out in December on Netflix. The first true adaptation of 100 Years of Solitude, Gabriel Garcia Marquez's story full of magical realism about a young couple who marry against their parents' wishes and eventually become founders of a utopian city by the sea, also comes with a stamp of approval from the late author's family, who made sure that the Netflix adaptation followed Garcia Marquez's wishes. It was incredibly important to the Garcia Marquez family that, one, it had to be filmed in Colombia, and two, it had to be filmed with Colombian actors in Spanish, director Alex Garcia Lopez tells Entertainment Weekly. In the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there was a lot of, as we know, whitewashed Hollywood adaptations of Latin American novels. Gabo suffered from a few of those adaptations, and he never wanted that to happen again with Cien Años de Soledad. The series is divided into two seasons, with Argentinian-born Garcia Lopez helming the first season and Colombian writer and director Laura Mora leading the second. Squid Game is out December 26th on Netflix. Don't worry, Squid Game fans. The red hair is no more, director Hwang Dong-hyuk says with a laugh, when Netflix's hit Korean survival drama returns for season two. Ji-hun, or player 456, played by Lee Jung-jae, is ditching the questionable hairdo he debuted in the season one finale. But that's not the only thing that's different. Lee tells Entertainment Weekly that due to Ji-hun's huge amount of survivor's guilt from being the sole survivor of the Bloody Games, he spent the past 3 years planning his revenge. He spent that time believing that these games must not continue and he must put an end to it, Lee says. He spent that time trying to track down those who are behind the game. When season two begins, Ji-hun has a new mission of wanting to put an end to these games ever being held in the first place, Hwang reveals. And that means re-entering the game to take it down from the inside. He is a different person now. You will not be getting the foolish or clumsy or childish at times Ji-hun that you saw in the beginning, Hwang adds. You will get to see a much heavier, darker side of Ji-hun. No Good Deed is in December also on Netflix. Ray Romano and Lisa Kudrow star as Paul and Linda Morgan, a husband and wife who put their 1920s Los Feliz home, one filled with happy memories but also dark secrets, on the market in this 8-episode dark comedy from Dead to Me architect Liz Feldman. The series, with a sprawling ensemble cast, Linda Cardellini, Luke Wilson, Tayona Paris, O.T. Fagabenley, Abby Jacobson, Poppy Liu, Linda Lavin, follows three families as they vie for the Morgan home, mining just how far we're willing to go to protect and provide for our families, teases Feldman. I'm not afraid for there to be some darkness, so this is certainly in the same universe as Dead to Me tonally. As for that reunion with Cardellini, expect her character, Margot, a status seeker in the house-flipping biz, to be completely opposite of Judy Hale. There's a whiff of Housewives in there. And the last one on our list, The Agency, that comes out quote-unquote late fall on Paramount+. Richard Gere has a big problem with his new series, The Agency. He and his wife were hooked on the hit French series Le Bureau, upon which the new espionage political thriller is based. The one thing that I feel terrible about is I probably can't watch this because I hate watching myself, Gere says. I probably won't be watching this with my wife. She'll watch it on her own. I know her. The Agency follows a covert CIA agent, played by Michael Fassbender, who is ordered to abandon his undercover life and return to London Station. But when the love he left behind reappears, romance reignites, and his career, his real identity, and his missions are pitted against his heart. Gere plays Bosco, the London Station chief with a storied past after serving as an undercover agent himself. This is a big shot, Gere reveals. He's got a mouth on him, too. He's not the strong, silent type, this guy. This is only the second TV role in Gere's long-running acting career, and he says it was worth the wait. Every episode is going to have surprises, he promises. That was the end of our very long article, What to Expect from the Yellowstone, 911, The Penguin, and 74 Other Fall Shows. It has been by the Entertainment Weekly staff, and it's been fun to read it. We've been reading it since early September. This is a good time to take a break. I'm kind of late here, but I'll mention that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website, EW.com. I'm hopping over to the movie section now. Wicked came out recently, and here's how Wicked pulled off that gravity-defying pair of cameos and others you might have missed. This is exclusive to Entertainment Weekly, and it's by Maureen Lee Lanker. There's a warning here that this article contains spoilers from Wicked, but I've seen Wicked now, and I don't think that this really spoils a lot of it. So if you haven't seen it and you were planning to, I don't think this is going to really ruin it for you. Who's the Madge whose major itinerary is making all Oz merrier? That would be John M. Chu and Stephen Schwartz, the masterminds behind the most heartwarming cameos in the big screen adaptation of Wicked, now in theaters. From the start, Chu knew that there was no way to make a film adaptation of the Broadway musical and not feature the original leading ladies, Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth. Wicked, which opened on Broadway in 2003, starred Menzel as Elphaba, a green girl who is demonized by the Wizard of Oz as the Wicked Witch of the West, and Chenoweth as Glinda, the popular girl formerly known as Galinda, who forms an unexpected bond with Elphaba. The show was nominated for 10 Tony Awards, including nods for Menzel and Chenoweth, Menzel won, and it's gone on to become a veritable global phenomenon. In short, a Wicked film without Menzel and Chenoweth would be like Oz without a yellow brick road. We knew we wanted to honor them, Chu tells Entertainment Weekly. Their DNA is all over this. This is the thing that I watched that inspired me and stayed with me for over 20 years. It was about what would give them the most reverence. What was the proper way to honor them? Having them just open the door for someone, it would make me more angry, to be honest, as a fan. For the film's stars, Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, who take over as Elphaba and Glinda, respectively, Menzel and Chenoweth's participation wasn't merely a fun Easter egg for fans. It was a necessity. We insisted, Erivo notes. We were like, this is not happening without them, so where is it? Chu credits Schwartz, Wicked's composer and lyricist, with the idea to extend the Wizomania sequence in one short day to allow a hefty musical feature for Menzel and Chenoweth. We talked about different areas, and then we talked about Wizomania. I felt there's this hard thing of these backstories and trying to fill in at this moment, Chu explains. But doing it through Kristen and Idina could be wonderful. The fact that they were the wise women of Oz felt so great, and then on top of that, there's this theater group in Emerald City, and the idea that they were the biggest stars in Emerald City was so fun. We love playing homage to them in there. Menzel and Chenoweth appear as two enchantresses of Oz who recount the history of the Grimmery, which is the magical spell book in Oz, as well as the wizard's arrival. Schwartz wrote it specifically for them, then called asking the two Broadway legends if they do it. I said, just make us look pretty, Menzel quips. With that mandate, there was one edit they needed the production team to make before they would sign off. We both texted, Chenoweth explains, and she said, have you seen the description of us in the movie? It didn't say old and decrepit, but it was something like that. So we changed it, and we said, no, we're not going to be those wise women. Adds Menzel, we said, can we just be beautiful fairy goddesses? For his part, Chu wants to state that, for the record, he had nothing to do with the character's description as originally written. Listen, I don't write the words for that, he jokes. I didn't even think of it, and when we saw it on the paper, we're like, no, come on. It was corrected very quickly, let me put it that way. Once that was resolved, Chenoweth and Menzel were ready to bring some magic. We had the best day rehearsing, Menzel says, while Chenoweth adds, it was almost like Glinda and Elphaba grown up. It was really fun. Though Menzel and Chenoweth's cameos are the most flashy, they're not the only familiar faces to pop up in the Wizomania sequence. Schwartz and original book writer Winnie Holman also make an appearance. Schwartz plays the guard at the Emerald City Gate who announces, "The Wizard will see you now." and Holzman is a member of the acting troupe. It took a lot of convincing to get them into this movie because they resisted it, Chu says. I was like, you guys have to be in this. We didn't know where, and then once Steven wrote that section into Wizomania, it became clear that Steven had to do The Wizard Will See You Now. That's the moment. Winnie actually feels like she is from Oz, Chu adds of his decision to place her amidst the Emerald City hoi polloi. She is a very particular, unique character. Wicked devotees will have no shortage of cameos to look out for while watching and re-watching the film. There's probably a lot of cameos that you missed, he notes. There's a lot of past Elphabas and Glindas, not just in this movie, but also in the other movie. I wouldn't say there's a ton that I would point out to you. I want you to find it for yourself. But keep looking. As for Menzel and Chenoweth, the two ladies were given a lot of freedom to play and discover their new characters within this Ozian world. For Menzel, it was a particularly delightful experience getting to watch Chenoweth build a character from the ground up. Chenoweth was attached to Wicked from the very first developmental workshop, but Menzel wasn't cast until the San Francisco tryout. The ideas just flow, Menzel gushes, of seeing Chenoweth at work. It's so inspiring. Whether it's funny or emotional, her choice is just what it is. You're just so free. You don't judge yourself and you let things come. It's pretty astounding to watch her come to life. As an artist, I can get in my head about a lot of stuff, but she's just so free. Both Chenoweth and Menzel shared photos of their day on set on their social media accounts. One short day, Chenoweth wrote, alongside a carousel of images of her in costume as the wise woman, and photos of her sharing special moments on set with Grande and Erivo. The most magical time back in the Emerald City. Who saw @ Wicked Movie this weekend? Menzel also shared her own slideshow of images, including shots of her rehearsing her cameo with Chenoweth and photos of her with Holzman, Schwartz, and others. This was a special day, she wrote. Sisterhood all around. Hashtag Wicked Movie. The moment also allows Chenoweth and Menzel to pay tribute to some of the most memorable aspects of their portrayals, including their signature vocalizations and Chenoweth's skill with a magic wand. But audiences will likely delight most in the brief appearance of Menzel's use of her iconic defying gravity vocal riff, also known as Elphaba's war cry. Though they were encouraged to play around and improvise, Mendel says that nod to her original performance was scripted by Schwartz. That's a Stephen Schwartz conspiracy, Chu confirms. I don't know how he cooks up his delights in there, but when I heard it, I was like, you've got to do this. We've got to give them their key moments in this. Understandable, considering that Menzel and Chenoweth changed Wicked for good. In the article, there is a link so that we can watch the full video with Erivo, Grande, Menzel, and Chenoweth. That was how Wicked pulled off that gravity-defying pair of cameos and others you might have missed. It's exclusive to Entertainment Weekly, and it was by Maureen Lee Lenker. Here's the other article I promised last week that I would finish this week. It is a gift-giving guide, Entertainment Weekly's 2024 Pop Culture Holiday Gift Guide, 'Tis the Season to be Shopping. It's by the Entertainment Weekly staff, and there are 28 items on the list. I had gotten through items 1 through 17, and next I'll finish up with items 18 through 28. How they started it was by saying shopping for loved ones shouldn't be stressful, but it can often be one of the least wonderful things about the holidays. That's why Entertainment Weekly has compiled our annual wish list to help you find the perfect present for the pop culture savvy peeps in your life or yourself. Check out the gift suggestions here, which feature a mix of fun products and price points. So we will start with item number 18, right where we left off. Voluspa Pink Goes With Green candle duo set. Opposites attract, even when it comes to candles. Voluspa's thrillifying collection of Wicked-themed candles and reed diffusers includes this gorgeous gift set featuring a bewitching banyan forest candle with notes of phosphorescent forest, tangled banyan branches, and glowing amber elixir, inspired by Elphaba, a perfectly pink yuzu candle with notes of perfectly pink yuzu, sparkling sea salt, candied flowers, and vanilla bubbles, inspired by Glinda, and a shiny gold wick trimmer. We can buy that for $98 at voluspa.com, voluspa.com. Beastie Boys Ill Communication 3LP Deluxe Edition. Yeah, Licensed to Ill and Paul's Boutique are considered the classics, but Ill Communication may be the hip-hop hipster's most daring release, a chaotic 20-song party where punk, jazz, and funk spill their drinks all over each other and still walk out dignified. This 30th anniversary vinyl reissue unearths a rare 2009 remastered version of the double album and includes a third LP of B-sides, live takes, and remixes. Of course, at the center of it all is the explosive rap-rock hybrid Sabotage, the rowdiest, mosh-pittiest thing these guys ever did. We can buy that for $125 at shop.udiscovermusic.com. That's shop dot the letter U, DISCOVERMUSIC.com. Next, it's Outer Banks Poglandia two-tone mug. You don't have to be a Pogue to rep Poglandia. This coffee mug featuring JJ's, that's Rudy Pankow's, original artwork will make any Outer Banks fan happy this holiday season. We can buy that for $17 at Netflix.com. Maddie Matheson Soups, Salads, Sandwiches. Maddie Matheson plays a handyman with seemingly no culinary skills on the bear, but off-screen, he's a Toronto-based chef and restaurateur who has served as a food consultant and executive producer on the Hulu series since its first season. Matheson's new cookbook, which he wrote specifically for The Home Cook, features 126 mouth-watering recipes that put bold twists on signature classics, delivered with minimal effort for maximum flavor. As an added bonus, it features fun personal stories and photographs of Maddie and his family. No word on whether or not it's earned a spot in Carmi's cookbook collection. We can buy that for $24.50 at Amazon.com. John Waters and Seth Bogart collaboration. Pope of Trash devotees will get a kick out of anything from this filthy collection of goodies, including barf bags for $13, t-shirts for $45, laundry bags for $40, and more. Designed by visual artist Seth Bogart in collaboration with the beloved Baltimore filmmaker who turned bad taste into an art form. The price range is $13 to $80 at wackywacko.com. That's WACKYWACKO.com. Venom Talking Action Figure. Kids will have a blast with this hungry action figure that comes to life with 14 button-activated phrases such as, "We are Venom," and "There's gonna be carnage." Eyes that light up and lever-activated smashing arms make the scary symbiote, who runs on three AG-13 button cell batteries included, that much more fun to play with. That's available for $30 at DisneyStore.com, and there's a note here that you can get 20% off with the code MAGIC, M-A-G-I-C, in all caps. CC40 Box Set. Cinephiles will treasure this 40-film box set celebrating 40 years of the Criterion Collection. The commemorative edition features an eclectic mix of classic and contemporary films that are most frequently chosen as favorites by the filmmakers, actors, and writers who visit the Criterion Closet, including Bicycle Thieves from 1948, Do the Right Thing from 1989, On the Waterfront from 1954, All That Jazz from 1979, Night of the Living Dead, 1968, Being There, 1979, Repo Man, 1984, and many more. Plus, they're accompanied by all the special features that come with their standalone editions. That is available for $640 on Criterion.com. That's Criterion.com. The Woobles Beetlejuice Crochet Kit. Learn how to crochet with this Beetlejuice-themed bundle for beginners from The Woobles, which comes with step-by-step instructions and videos on how to make cute little versions of some of your favorite characters, including Lydia Deetz, the Sandworm, the Shrunken Head, and, of course, Beetlejuice. To make things even easier, the beginner kit comes pre-started, and there's unlimited help available over email and text. We can buy that for $120 at thewoobles.com, thewoobles.com. We have three more on the list. Beats Studio Pro by Kim Kardashian, Bluetooth noise-canceling headphones. Even if you're not a fan of the Kardashians, you can't deny that Kim's Beats line, featuring her signature neutral color palette, is fire. The noise-canceling headphones, which come in shades of moon, dune, and earth, also boast up to 40 hours of battery life on a single charge. Stylish and practical. We can buy those for $350 at Amazon.com. Cocktails with George and Martha, Movies, Marriage, and the Making of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Lovers of theater, film, and good gossip will be hard-pressed to find anything better than Philip Geftler's riveting, rollicking account detailing the production of Mike Nichols' feature directorial debut, an adaptation of Edward Albee's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Elegantly written and featuring lush black-and-white photos from the set, Cocktails is a propulsively paced and heartfelt account of the Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton classic, featuring a plethora of juicy anecdotes and fascinating tidbits. Buy two copies, because once you skim a few pages, you'll want to devour it too. That's available for $22 from Amazon.com. And the last on our list, Wicked by Foster Grant Sunglasses. There are so many wickedly delightful gifts this holiday season, we just had to squeeze one more in. Like this exclusive limited collection of Foster Grant Sunnies released in celebration of the new movie. There are 8 spellbinding styles in total, with names like Glindified and Positively Green, and each comes with either a pink or black glitter case, depending on whether your taste is more in line with the popular one or the misunderstood one. Those are available for $40 each at fostergrant.com, fostergrant.com. Thanks for going through the rest of that list with me. That was Entertainment Weekly's 2024 Pop Culture Holiday Gift Guide, and it was by the Entertainment Weekly staff. And while I only have a few minutes left on the show, in case you haven't heard, there is an app for Sun Sounds. That's right, an app for your phone, for any of your portable devices, is available for Sun Sounds, and you can download it from wherever you usually download apps from, which is probably from Apple or Google Play. And once you download Sun Sounds, the app, it's free, by the way, so talk about a great gift to give somebody. And once you download it, and I'm looking at my app right now, I can listen live to whatever is being broadcast from Tempe, Tucson, or Flagstaff. There are links directly to different categories: news, disability, business, shopping, entertainment, where our show is, science, lifestyle, sports, kids, Espanol, shorts, jobs, and there's a section that is about sun sounds. So if I go to the entertainment section, all the recent shows that are entertainment-like are displayed there, and then you can play them on demand. For example, I'm seeing Reader's Digest, The Philosopher, New Yorker, Vanity Fair, car shows, poetry, Rolling Stone, Moho Magazine, The Onion, and even last week's Entertainment Weekly. So all of that is available from the app. It is free, and it's really easy to download. So if you don't have it downloaded yet for any of your devices, or you didn't know about it to recommend it to somebody, let them know. It's a really good resource. Well, I got that worked in, and I still have time to say thank you for listening to Entertainment Weekly this week. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Please come back next week to hear what I've found. I'm collecting up some good lists also for us in an upcoming show, and I think that fits with the theme of the season when it comes to shopping lists, naughty and nice lists, just so many lists, and so we'll have a show of lists coming up soon. Thanks again for listening. Goodbye.